nothing is more expensive than bad information. Know the source. OneRadioNetwork.com.
Well, a very pleasant good morning to you. This is Patrick Timpone. Hi, OneRadioNetwork.com. Good morning. It is the 10th of May, and it's my mom's birthday, 10th of May. Well, just thought about that. Happy birthday, Mom. And good to be with you this morning. A little bit later on, we're going to talk about organic and the labeling and what it means is what maybe what it doesn't mean. And with a very interesting fellow who studied the organic world of organics for many, many, many years. And that'll be about noon or so. Dr. William Wong is going to be here tomorrow. Doc Wong has been on our show three or four times over these many years and quite an expert in hormones. And we'll talk a bit about the potential, and it's only potential, shedding of these injections with hormones and some of the things you might be able to do to balance it out. Again, I say potential because we are beginning to hear rumblings around the natural community from the people that we believe are truly on top of their game, not just somebody that says they're a natural doctor, that this whole shedding thing could possibly, we don't know yet, could possibly be just a false flag, another fear porn thing to keep people separate, to say, well, the vax people got to stay away, possible. So we're staying on top of that for you. We just don't know for sure yet. Also tomorrow, all about wacky tobacco or cannabis, healing with cannabis, and that'll be tomorrow. And Penny Kelly, who's quite an interesting lady in the world of spirituality and their connection with geopolitics, and she's going to be here on Wednesday. Well, a little water is in order. I think you're going to find our first guest interesting fellow. His name is Anton Shatkin. We got it right, Shatkin. And he's an activist and has been since the 50s. In the early 30s, his dad, Jacob Shatkin, was a pro-Franklin Roosevelt lawyer, and he had blocked some of Wall Street's financial arrangements with Hitler and was legal counsel for the American Jewish Congress boycott against Germany. Wow. Anton grew up committed to justice with a strong sense of realities of power politics. His latest book looks like a really good one, and it is called Who We Are, Who We Are, Who We Are, America's Fight for Universal Progress from Franklin to Kennedy. I think this is just volume one as well, so he's going to have another volume coming out. Mr. Shatkin, good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Patrick. Very good to be with you.
Nice to have you, sir. So you grew up with a dad who was right in there with, tell us a bit about your father.
Well, he was an immigrant back in 1909, before the Russian Revolution, came from Latvia, became a lawyer. And he was in New York, saw that the big Wall Street firms expected to London were sponsoring the rise of Hitler. Hmm. And these were predominantly liberal people. The Harriman firm with George Bush's father, Prescott, was in there. And my father did lawsuits to destroy some of the arrangements that were made, financial arrangements, whereby Wall Street was supporting the rise to power of Hitler and then the Nazi Party. So, So unfortunately, didn't fully job of knocking him down and preventing World War II. But I learned a lot about from him, his spirit, really, because he died when I was 12. I found out a lot more about what he did later on. But his spirit was very useful in guiding the idea of justice, the idea that Wall Street and some of these establishment entities are not patriotic. Necessarily, some of them are hostile to our civilization, really, and that there are people and methods of building civilization and doing things in a beautiful way. So I was fortunate to have a model of something good in the past to help me think about doing history later on when I got into that.
Yes, sir. So, Mr. Shadkin, was this the real vision deep down in the hearts and souls of the founders? These were good guys, essentially, most of them. They really wanted something good and new and prosperous.
I want to approach this, answer this through something new for people, rather than saying we have good guys and bad in the world. That's not enough, unfortunately. You don't really, you can be misled, you can misunderstand, you can have wrong information. So in order to understand really how to solve today's problems, we have to look back at how things that were fundamentally good and great advances in our life, and particularly in our economy, how that was done in the past. And if you look at the real economic history of our country, you see two sides operating in the world, two sets of strategists. Our founders were, the principal founders, were on one side of this. They were nation builders, people who wanted to build up civilization and man's power. On the other side, there was an imperial system. It wasn't just England as a country, because that's not the problem. The problem was the London-centered imperial system, which we still have. It became London and Wall Street. But in those days, when they were making the revolution, mm-hmm. it was a very small set of men that were leading that. They were nationalists. They were idealists. Principally three men in charge of the revolutionary, the war, off George Washington in the field with the army, Benjamin Franklin running intelligence and diplomacy and fundraising, and Robert Morris in charge of the financing. And their associates included Alexander Hamilton and a few other close allies of Franklin. Franklin was really the key leader.
Really?
And these guys guided the revolution. They composed and wrote the Constitution. And they were looking at what had just happened then in England, which was there had been an industrial breakthrough. New steam engines, the invention of steam engines, the development of canals, all at once. The Industrial Revolution in England happened fast, and Franklin himself was over there for many years, from 1757 through 1775. Most of that time, he was living in England and mentoring and being the inspiration for the men that did those inventions. Like Boulton and Watt for the steam engine, Wedgley, the development of the canals. He was on the scene and organizing the group that did these breakthroughs. So he came back and helped the revolution. And we saw that we needed manufacturing in America. The British had tried to stop us. And when we were trying, we had the model of what the British had just done. All of a sudden, we see that the British government, the empire government, tried to prevent us or any other country from getting industry, from getting manufacturing. They did the inventions in England were idealists. They were not imperialists. They believed in republican ideas. They were also anti-slavery. Mm-hmm. And I show in my book that the people who did our breakthroughs from our revolution on, all the way up into the 20th century, the ones who led the great breakthroughs in our industry were not racists, they were not imperialists, they were pro-human, they were thinkers. The racists, the Southern slave owners, Wall Street and London imperialists, tried to stop the breakthroughs. They were opposed to U.S. getting manufacturing in the first place. There are many scoops in this book.
Huh. Interesting. Makes sense. How did they do that exactly? Was it about the money, Mr. Shadkin? Was it about the money and not allowing and not wanting the people living there to create their own currency? Was that one of the ways they stopped the industrial the inventions and stuff?
The British Empire, in my book, I show the origin of the present establishment really starts in the late 1700s, where the British, after they got the industrial power, they set up a new doctrine called free trade.
Mm-hmm.
The idea was that no country should be allowed to interfere with imports or do anything. Nobody should have their own sovereign government that would help to lift their country out of poverty or make them industrialized. So the free trade doctrine that came from the imperialist Adam Smith said, you're not allowed to have high tariffs, allowed to have a national bank for your country that would interfere with private bankers' power. You're not allowed to have a government spending money to promote transport. So this is called laissez-faire,
yes, sir,
or free trade doctrine. The American system was the opposite. We said, no, because the British are dumping cheap goods here and stop us with these dogmas like free trade. No, we are going to promote manufacturing on purpose in our country. And if they send cheap goods in here, we'll put a tax on it so that you'll buy American instead, and we'll build up our manufacturing. One thing to look at closely is, how did we get railroads? Who built the railroads? Well, the first dozens of railroads were built, designed by U.S. Army engineers, by President John Quincy Adams, to work on designing the routes of the railroads and the roadbeds. The West Point trained these engineers. There was a foundry, the West Point Foundry, that built the first locomotives. All the original railroads were public projects, that is, cities, states, even counties, and also federal money went into buying the stocks, and then private people would put their money in, but they wouldn't put money into something unless there was government backing for it. So these were community projects. Later on, you had Wall Street, who took over these that were created by good people and by our country, and often ruined them. They destroyed the railroads. Today, we need to look back on the progress that we have made in our economy, how we got out of being a backward country in the first place, and the great advances we had, including later things like electricity, petroleum, mass production, the earlier things, the canals, the railroads, the coal industry, the iron industry, all of these were done as national projects with backing by really superb people. If we see how we did it in the past, it'll give us the courage and the optimism to say, well, wait a minute. After Kennedy was murdered, our country went off the rails. We were deindustrialized. Maybe we could go back and resume that outlook of progress. You know, I saw your lady talking about transhumanism, where you've got wackos saying that we need to re-engineer the human being. Well, no, you can improve humanity by improving the technology, the infrastructure, and the industry of the country, and doing that in a very generous way in aid of other countries, the way we did in the past.
Yes, sir.
USA helped bring things like roads and electricity to other countries, like Russia and Japan and Germany and other countries. When we were generous and our country was generous to our own people, said we need to build up our power as a nation, then we became wealthy and powerful and had really outstanding living standards.
Yes, sir.
When we got into this...
Well, isn't it... Yeah. That, can it be argued, though, that the internationalists or the globalists, they've been kind of in our face electing presidents and putting them in since for a long time, haven't they? And...
Yes.
You know, and so and they didn't like Mr. Trump. I don't know if he was a good guy or half swampy or a little swampy. Who knows? But he was a nationalist, right? He wanted to bring back more stuff here. Now, look what's going on now. But so let me ask you this. Laissez-faire, and I get that, and I'm with you right there. But what if, you know, instead of creating $2 trillion to give the people, the Treasury would borrow $2 trillion, and that's where the money's coming from, the Fed. Look at the Fed's balance sheet. It's up to $8 trillion this morning. So the money's coming from the Fed that they create, and then do you think it would be reasonable to take a $2 trillion and just start building infrastructure like they did with the Hoover Dam or the Tennessee Valley Authority, you know, those kind of things? Is that cool? And
yes.
You think that's good?
Yes. Here's what happened. Trump came in, and when he was campaigning, he said two things that terrified the establishment. One of them was, we're going to dump free trade.
Right.
We need jobs in the United States. Why should we just, you know, let China build everything for us? And he originally wasn't hostile to China. That's something that the Republicans and Democrats both agree on now, that we should go to war with China. That's stupid. Let's build our own country, right? So he said, dump free trade and let's stop the wars. Why are we hostile to Russia? Russia's not our enemy. No nation on this planet is our natural enemy. That's just baloney. So unfortunately, he comes in as president. And in recent decades, no elected president is the actual president. There's forces that are trying to prevent him from acting in an independent way. And Trump never, because of who he was and his style, never educated the public about the real history of the country what these forces are.
Yeah.
Why don't we have infrastructure? What happened? What is Wall Street? What are the international central banks? We need to be able to, if you invest money, credit that is generated from our government, if you invest that credit in building up the physical infrastructure, but it can't be in some way. It has to be modern and efficient. We need high-speed trains. We need nuclear power plants and dams where that's all. That's needed all over the world. That was Kennedy's program for building nuclear power plants all over the world, use reprocessing to take the waste and reuse it as fuel. Don't bury it. It's hot. It's useful. The space program. We need the latest science to develop the capabilities of our people. We need water projects to bring fresh water where it's needed. In our West, Africa has great drought areas. They have tremendous water. Move the water. Half of Africa has no electricity, 500 million people. They need massive energy throughputs. We need cooperation with the other countries like Russia, China, India, Brazil, South Africa, Germany, Japan. The great countries work together to solve physical problems. Now, if you have this kind of cooperation, and you're getting successes like we did in the past. The problem today, people haven't seen real progress in our society. They're not optimistic. They don't know what optimism is. Imagine if we had successes and went away from this insane permanent war idea.
Yes, sir.
Stop trying to change other countries' governments. Work on improving our country. And then you might have people regaining confidence in their own government. Right now, people don't, at least half the people, hate the government all the time. They don't trust the authorities. Imagine if the authorities were proving that they were acting in the general welfare. They don't do that now. That's why you don't trust things even when they're right. Even when they're doing something right, people don't trust them. Because in general, the people with a lot of money and a lot of power act in a way that is purposely detrimental to mankind.
So when we're talking about a human condition, an issue, a spiritual, if you will, issue, and what are we, the people, gonna do about that? I mean, we can't change somebody. There are globalists and internationalists who have been around, you know, history better than anyone for a long time, right? The Rothschilds and Rockefellers, and these boys play rough, and they install things that make them money, you know, with the medical system that the Rockefellers did, what, 100 years ago of surgery, long hospital stays, pharmaceuticals that just don't work, you know, and we have... So, well, let's go back a little bit, because I hear what you're saying, and it sounds great. I just like to see how we can help manifest
that. Let me be a little bit more specific. I'll be a little bit more specific.
Okay.
The United States was founded with a mission of improving our living standards and our skills. And unfortunately, in the founding government, they had this program that was part of the revolution and was really part of the revolution that says our government has the power to help build the country. But unfortunately, it was blocked largely by Thomas Jefferson.
Jefferson.
He got in a fight with
I thought he
Hamilton.
Was a good guy, yeah. Jefferson.
Oh, I have the story of how Jefferson went over to the enemy side. He originally was a revolutionary. He was anti-slavery, even though he was a slave owner. He was saying, let's build up a new civilization. And he was an integral part of the revolution. But he lost his reputation as governor of Virginia during the revolution. He fled from the British advance. And he thought he was finished in politics. And he was convinced by other leaders of the gentry in Virginia that he represent Southern interests instead of being that kind of revolutionary. And then he went over to France to replace Franklin as ambassador there, and he got in with the leaders of the British intelligence system over there, Lord Shelburne, who sent a teacher into Paris to work with Jefferson on learning about free trade, no government allowed, no, that you have to just leave things in the hands of the powerful. You don't want to change. And you explain that by saying we love backward agrarianism. That's better than having manufacturing. So he comes back to America and fights and worries about Hamilton. It was total lies that he told against Hamilton. Hamilton has the program from Franklin and Washington to build up manufacturing. Why shouldn't we have manufacturing? The Southern slave owners were getting manufactured goods from England and exporting cotton to them. So they're part of the imperial system. No, we want our own manufacturing. We want to transform our country to be the leading manufacturer. That was the founding program, but it was blocked by politics. So about 40 years later, 30 years later, the next generation, Nicholas Biddle, DeWitt Clinton, John Quincy Adams.
Yeah.
Yeah, but these people were nationalists and pro-human, the enemy. They understood the imperial system being the enemy that causes backwardness. And they said, no, America is going to build itself up. We're going to have canal roads. We're going to have modern industry. We're going to sponsor the development of our country as a great power. Physical power. So I have found six leaders of the Industrial Revolution that occurred from the 1820s to the 40s. Their whole story is in here. You won't find this anywhere else.
Wow.
It's Nicholas Biddle. It's Matthew Carey, who's an economist, an Irish rebel, came here. Nicholas Biddle was head of the president of the Bank of the United States. Adams, Secretary of State and then President. DeWitt Clinton, he was governor of New York, built the Erie Canal, but he was part of this team. Put through a bill to allow Army engineers to keep building civilian projects and raise the tariff to protect our manufacturing. General Joseph Gardner Swift, the second superintendent of West Point, who was leading the use of Army facilities and Army engineers and their training to be civil engineers and to help us. Now, look at how we did these things. We had these, we built the coal mining industry. It didn't exist before this started. We built the canals to carry the coal. Suddenly built railroads as great projects. We built a whole canal system out to the Mississippi. That developed and immediately created the cities of Chicago and Cleveland and Toledo on the canals and the Great Lakes because we built this transport system out there. These were all national projects. Later on, the nationalists in this group in Philadelphia sponsored Thomas Edison, who built the first, with cities and municipalities, built the first utilities, the first electric utilities. Wall Street tried to stop that too.
Didn't they?
Where'd the petroleum come from? Rockefeller didn't develop the petroleum, he took it over. It was developed by people associated with the Pennsylvania Railroad and the nationalists in that grouping. And we had a whole set of initiatives like the first great steel mills. They paid good wages. There was also a labor union affiliated with these nationalists. It was called the Knights of Labor. This is it. I'm going to be covering this stuff in volume two. That goes from Lincoln to John Kennedy.
Wow.
And these people were pro-human. They were very knowledgeable about the enemy imperial system. Why should the United States act like Brits, like in Syria and Iraq and other countries? America and Britain have been led by people hostile to our Western values.
Yes, sir.
Right now, that's happening. That's been happening in recent decades. What is Western values? It's the uplift of humanity. It's national sovereignty. Each nation governs itself. You don't need a global system to govern you. We can cooperate as friends between countries, but each country govern itself and mind its own business, except to help each other with projects that are needed. That's what we need to do.
You sound like George Washington. That's what he said, right? Europe is a land of eternal war. Let's trade with him. Yeah, let's trade with him. We don't need to be. Well, but you know, we have lots to talk about here. We have lots to talk about. Anton Shatkin is with us. His book is called Who We Are. And if you go to whoweareBook.com, you'll see chapter summaries. And this sounds like something you want to get just volume one and really learn what the history of this country is and pass this along to your kids. And because I don't think they're going to get this in government schools. Before we do the break, I want to go back to Hamilton. It's so curious what you said, Mr. Shatkin, about Jefferson and Hamilton. We've been told over the years, and perhaps this has been not correct, that Hamilton was one of the forces that was involved with getting the British and the elite back in to the First Bank of the United States, which is what, 1793 Central Bank, that he was one of the sleazy guys that let the people we just defeated back in. That's not true?
No, I think that it's slightly off. Jefferson opposed setting up a national bank.
Yes, sir.
And he opposed the program for tariffs.
Yes.
He opposed having tariffs to protect industry. He wrote a book, and this is crucial for people to understand. You can look this up. It was called Notes on Virginia. That's Jefferson's only book. And it was developed with the help of the British intelligence when he was over there in France. This book, Jefferson says, America must never develop its own manufacturing. We should just import manufactured goods from Europe. And we should not be a workshop over here. Let's have farming. Now, his view of farming is based on hypocrisy because he himself, like the farmers that you see in Ohio or Massachusetts or Alabama or something today, right? A farmer is somebody that owns his own farm and does his own work.
Yes, sir.
He might have some worker or two that's helping him, but it's a family thing. Jefferson was part of a set of people in Virginia that ruled the state. It was a few families, including the Randolphs and other people like that, and had hundreds of slaves doing the work and also destroying the soil. They were not scientific. If you just grow tobacco as a one crop or cotton as one crop, you're ruining the soil. Our farmers are scientific people. They know how to replenish the soil. They know how to, the issue was having animals for the manure and plowing in the right way and understanding drainage and building the kind of irrigation you need. This is all science. And this involves somebody being proud of their own family enterprise that is accomplishing work in a more and more scientific way. Mm-hmm. And by the way, not just doing back-breaking hard labor, but doing things in a smart way, including getting tractors, right? Mm-hmm. We need industry to supply the tools. Abraham Lincoln set up the agriculture department as an aid to farmers being able to accomplish scientific work. And our country showed the world how we could produce almost an infinite amount of things for our people. You could do that same thing in other countries if they had the right kind of support. Africa has massive resources. They have fertile soil. They have plenty of water. They could solve problems. We used to be an example to the world of doing this. But going back to Jefferson, let's pose a simple question. Should America be allowed to have its own manufacturing? Jefferson said no after he was converted by this British connection that he had. Hamilton said yes. And recent globalists have said no, that America should not have its own manufacturing. It's a simple question, yes or no. I think we should. I think every country ought to have at least a large part of the skills it needs to be self-sufficient.
Of course.
It doesn't mean you are self-sufficient. Cooperation, you need trade, but you need to have modern powers, modern science, control over nature in each country. And it doesn't hurt us to have other countries like Iran, right? Or Syria, or Russia, or China, or any of these countries, or even North Korea, to have science, including nuclear science. You're not going to protect yourself by keeping people backward and savage. They have to be your friends, and they will be your friends as long as there's a lot of other powerful countries that can balance them. And if we have friends like we did, look, at the end of the 19th century, our friends included Japan, Germany, and Russia. The British were terrified that America was helping build up those countries into modern powers. And they said, no, let's turn these countries against each other and against America. Britain made the empire made a military alliance with the Japanese, turned them against the U.S. and against Russia. And to destabilize Russia, the communists took advantage of that and took over Russia. The empire said, we're going to have a great war to stop this new world. That we had set up a whole new system in the world of sovereign countries. Our republic helping other countries whose governments we didn't even like. So what? It's none of our business. They have a different religion, a different government. That's fine as long as they're not trying to take over the world.
Right.
Right? So is Iran really trying to take over the world? I don't think so.
Of course
even
not.
North Korea.
So that was what the Civil War was about, really, wasn't it? Dividing the country. And
it was.
Yeah.
That's right. The British sought the United States. And our best answer to that division between the slaveholding and non-slaveholding, the greatest answer to that and our founding fathers' program was to rapidly industrialize our country, including the South, so that nobody in their right mind would want to invest in a slave plantation. You can make a lot more money and profit with skilled labor. But if you block the development of skilled labor industries, then the Southern slaveholders are powerful in their own realm, and they bow to the superior power of big England or big empires in Europe, which they get their goods, their manufactured goods from, and they send raw materials. We don't want to just be a raw materials. Look at Africa or South America or South Asia. They would just supply raw materials to the great power of Europe. That's a terrible relationship. Why couldn't each country have its own culture, its own production, but be friends and learn from each other, right?
Yeah, I'm with you.
To get away with that, we have to be powerful in our own country.
Need to take a quick break here. Fun stuff with Anton Shaykin, and his book is Who We Are. You can go to whowearebook.com. I'm going to take a little break, sir. You stay right there. And then the first question I want to ask is, what was the seminal moment? What was the thing that precipitated the Civil War? Can we do that when I get back? What was the thing that really did it? So we're going to do that. Daniel Vitale is one of your flagship products, of course, the colostrum, which is easy to take, yummy, easy to get the kids to take. Talk a little bit about how it's necessary for the baby calves, but then also that it works for people.
Well, colostrum is the first food for all mammals. So all mammals produce colostrum before they produce milk. And that colostrum works not just in that animal, but it'll work across species and other animals too. And nowhere is this more true than with cows and human beings. Now, cows produce this surplus, which allows us to take a little bit of that and then turn it into this powder form, which is a fantastic food in smoothies and other confections and things like that. It has this ability to impart the immunity of the animal that it came from to us.
This is a pretty magical superfood, in my opinion, and Patrick's whole gut has continued to improve with more revolutions around the sun, and I've sure had my share of colostrum over the years. Wonderful superfood, and one of the best ones available today. SirThrival, any SirThrival link, colostrum, oneradionetwork.com. And I think we still have something going on with colostrum on sale. This is, let's see, yeah, we still got it, and you can grab it, let's see, through the 17th, we've got one more week, and I don't think we need a promo code. Wow, yeah, no code needed. You can save up to $59 on this guy. It's the one I got. This is a kilo, for those of you in Portland. It's 2.2 pounds, and you look at this beautiful white and the smell, and you can just eat this, put it in smoothies. You can make chocolate confections for the kids. You can put it in their smoothies. Wonderful immune factors, great food, lots of minerals, lots of protein, some good fat. It's just quite an amazing product, and we think you'll enjoy it. And it is colostrum. There's no promo code needed. But we're saving up to, I think, let's see, on this one, what do we save here? Like $39-40 on this, or up to $39-40 on this big one, this kilo. So it's quite a cool thing. It's a beautiful thing for you to get your arms around. And if you've not had any colostrum, this is a great time to try it. It's on sale for another week. No code needed. Any SirThrival link, oneradionetwork.com. Previously with cardiologist Dr. Joel Kahn, 35 years experience in cardiology.
On your commercial break, you hit a hot button because I'm a giant fan of infrared sauna and the cardiac benefits.
Tell us about why you like these saunas for the heart. What does it do?
In Japan, it's a traditional therapy of heart disease to even sick heart patients to sit for 15 or 20 minutes in an infrared sauna, then lie down and rest and hydrate for about half an hour. They call it Waon, W-A-O-N. It means soothing heat. And they've done research studies, like 30 of them, in humans. Anti-ages your arteries and improves the strength of your heart, and it may actually prolong survival in sick heart patients. Anybody can just, again, go to the internet, read about infrared sauna heart disease, or put my name there because I've written many articles about it. Now there's data coming out of Sweden and Finland, because they've published some amazing data, the number of times a week you're in a sauna, number of minutes each time, you can just track out how long you're going to live. So very powerful therapy by being in My favorite is an infrared sauna.
Well, I don't know about you, but if the heart muscles and the arteries are happy, things are good. And we have a great sauna, as you saw the picture of it, and we've been using our sauna for over 10 years now. I was in it this morning, about 2 o'clock in the morning. Sometimes if I get up and do yoga, I do yoga for an hour or two in the morning, early morning, when it's quiet, and then jump in the sauna, and then a cold shower, and pew, pew. It's pretty cool. Very powerful. We believe, I'll use the term know, that the cause of disease is the oxidation of biomolecules, and that is caused things that cause disease, which is poisons and chemicals and heavy metals, toxins, right? Things that are in our food, in our air, and in our water. We don't believe in the germ theory. We don't believe there's some virus running around trying to kill people. All of our research over the last couple of years has shown that this whole germ theory is a myth. It is a it's a spell that they have cast upon, and they pulled this entire pandemic off with nothing but the media. This is our belief. The experience and the research and the science shows it, because they've never, ever isolated a virus. Spanish flu, polio, HIV, it's all been a scam. It's all been mostly about the vaccines, and there's just no science to back any of it up. But everybody believes it because, I guess, like history, that Mr. Shatkin is talking about, once you believe something long enough, everybody believes that it's true. I mean, up till now, I thought Thomas Jefferson was the good guy and Alexander Hamilton was the bad guy. So I'm learning something right here. So anyway, the point is that toxins will leave your body. If they come in your body, they will leave. And that's why we do lots of detoxing with everything from coffee enemas to sweating in the sauna to lots of plenty good fresh water, dry brush massage, exercise, organic food. And the body will ditch these things. I don't care what they are, glyphosates, all of them. And your body will also be stronger to withstand these electromagnetic things that the globalists are putting out there all over the place, every 40 feet in some cities. So, you know, we get stronger, and none of this stuff can hurt us. None of this stuff can hurt us. So get yourself a sauna. It's one of the best ones that we know, for $1,195 delivered in the lower 48. We ship them all over the world. The only place we haven't been able to ship them is Germany, which we haven't figured out why, but Merkel, you know, she's a bit strange. So I don't know why we can't ship them to Germany, but everywhere else, we've shipped them all over the world. Just email me and I'll give you the price wherever you live, patrick@oneradionetwork.com. And if I press the right button, this will probably work.
We are listener-supported, One Radio Network.
We indeed are listener-supported, One Radio Network, and we appreciate your ongoing support. And I just lost the slide. I don't know where it went. Mr. Anton Shatkin is here. How long? Boy, I'm excited about getting your book. I'm gonna go to whoweare.com, right? That's where I want to go get the book.
WhoweareBook.com.
How long was this one in the making? This is volume one. How long have you been working on this?
40 years of research.
Whoa.
2 years of writing for the first volume, and it'll take me another year to do volume
to do two. Volume two.
I'd like to entertain the question that you were developing about the Civil War.
Civil War, because. Tell us really, you know, speak to us like we're a young child or a golden retriever. Keep it simple. What really precipitated the Civil War? What was it?
Around about in 1828, there was an election where Andrew Jackson was elected. And he was a hero from the War of 1812, a military hero. But his backers and sponsors were the most powerful of them were imperialists, and they were in New York and Virginia, and they wanted to change the mission of the country. And it was from that point on until 1860 that Southern slave owners and Wall interests combined to block the further industrialization of the country. They said, we're not going to allow the country to be changed any further towards modern industry. And they put more and more of the Southern gentry into power over the country, all the time telling the people that we are for your human rights. Does that sound familiar?
Yes, sir. And because Jackson ran on the idea of kicking out the central bankers, right? He was gonna clean out the den of vipers, he called them, right? But was he lying?
He didn't. No, we got to be very precise on the history.
Okay.
Here's what happened. When he ran for president in 80, his main attack was against the previous administration. He wasn't really attacking the bank at that point. He was attacking President John Quincy Adams and Henry Clay, the Secretary of State. He said that they'd made a corrupt bargain, that Clay supported Adams for president, and then Adams made Henry Clay Secretary of State as a reward. This is a fundamental lie, and he's not really talking about the politics of these people who were nationalists. But Jackson himself was known as a nationalist, so this was pure political talk. After he got in, his program shifted more and more to this free trade, anti-industrial, and he said the government shouldn't help build canals, shouldn't help build railroads, we shouldn't have high tariffs. When South Carolina threatened to secede over the high tariff, he said, let's compromise. You can't secede. He stood up to that. But he said, let's lower the tariffs and we won't further develop our manufacturing. So he was drawn by Martin Van Buren and other snakes and people, some of the leaders of Virginia, real deeply evil people tied deeply into the British Empire. Mm. And also New York interests that later become Wall Street, guiding this shift. And then you had a succession of rotten presidents. But very simply, the mission of the country was thrown off from this previous period of the 1820s when we started to have this rush of industrial progress and build new cities and build railroads and build up the coal industry and have machines in industry and high wage industries. And so by blocking this industrialization, suddenly you're just building up this cancer, which is cotton production. And they would need to conquer new land as they destroyed the old land in Virginia. So Mississippi, maybe Mexico, let's make war on Mexico so we can plant cotton there, kill off the Hispanics and bring new slaves from Africa. What a stupid program. Why not build up the USA as a manufacturing country? So the program shifted by a globalist system, the imperial system, which started with Jackson, Van Buren, then Polk and Tyler and Buchanan, Pierce.
Right to Lincoln.
Terrible president.
Right to Lincoln.
And then Lincoln said, no, we're going back to the founding program, high tariffs, a national bank, or banking that we can do with private banks, but they have to be part of a national banking system. This is not the central bank. This is not the Federal Reserve.
Different.
This is banking for the development of our country. If we have national banking, it means that private bankers cannot run the country or the world. If we have a national bank that directs credit to build up productive industry, then we can build up our country. But the central banking system that we have now, starting with the Federal Reserve in 1913, set up on the basis of a set of central banks, primarily the Bank of England and others.
Yes, sir.
That was controlled by those central bankers outside of our country.
Yes, sir.
They're the ones setting the program.
Oh,
our Federal Reserve doesn't serve the purpose of building up the United States economy. It serves to just allow these speculative bankers, including the offshore system, to have investment on just bets that are not building anything.
Yes, sir.
It's totally unstable.
So, Lincoln was okay with a central bank, but he wanted it, the profits to go to the Treasury, not to the private bankers, right?
He didn't set up a new national bank. He set up what was a national banking system where a private bank had government bonds and had to obey certain rules to be a bank instead of being what these guys have become. J.P. Morgan Chase, Rockefeller, sure. Morgan, they're not bankers. They're oligarchs. They run whole industries. They dictate to our federal government the whole thing. What Lincoln said is we have a program. What's the program? We need transcontinental railroads. We need steel mills. So let's have tariffs to protect our steel industry so we could pay decent wages and get new technology, still make a profit, and not be undercut by cheap slave labor coming in from overseas. We need to have colleges that are free. He set up the land-grant colleges. Each state got federal lands that they were to sell to settlers, and they would use the money to provide tuition-free college. That's Penn State, Ohio State, those are land colleges. He set up the agriculture department. He set up homesteading, where you get a federal land, and if you work it yourself, you have a quarter mile of land as your own. It's free. Many different programs to make our people more productive, to give them more opportunity. He wanted to develop the West. That was shut down later by Teddy Roosevelt and other people. We should have developed the West. That would have provided jobs for everybody, including the American Indians, who were screwed by people who sold out our interests by saying, let's be at war with the Indians all the time, instead of developing a huge amount of jobs for everybody. There's plenty of resources there that could have been developed by a much larger population in Montana, in Utah, in New Mexico. We could have had flourishing farms and industries out there and a larger population. That was our original program, to develop real modern civilization with Mexico as a flourishing modern country by our side. Why should they have to flee their own country to come here? Why not have high-wage industries in Mexico and in Central America? That kind of program would help us and them at the same time, but not the imperialists. They don't want that. They want each country to be used for cheap labor or for conflicts that they're managing.
And I think it could be argued just for today, I don't think there's ever been a time, correct me if I'm wrong, sir, that these industrials or these globalists, these internationalists, the bankers, if you will, the Dollar Inc. people, they have more control over this country, I think, than they ever have had. I mean, with what's going on, right? Do you think that's true?
I want to look on the positive side. So you get a handle on instead of us thinking like peasants, let's think like real strategists, okay? Like confident men.
Mm-hmm.
So go back to what Franklin Roosevelt posed, the four freedoms. This is a speech, January 6, 1941. You can look it up. What are the four freedoms that everybody in the world is entitled to? First one is freedom of speech. That's a tricky one, right? Today, do we have freedom of speech?
No.
Even if we weren't censored, do people really address the kind of problems that I'm addressing now? In when they're speaking to the public, they don't really go into it. They don't talk about like how we changed after the murder of Kennedy. Deep issues, right? So we need freedom of speech. The second freedom that Franklin Roosevelt said we need is the freedom of religion. That starts with respect for religion. our own religion and other people's religion.
Yes, sir.
You have these religious conflicts going on all over the world. That's stupid. That's murder. But it's not freedom. We need to respect religion, including other people's religion, and we, including Christianity. You have to respect that. Maybe it's not respected. So then the next one is freedom of freedom from want. It means that we now have the capability of getting people all over the world, including our, how do we get that capability? By building up modern industry, steel mills, and really powerful electricity and science. We got these things. Let's not give those things up. Let's actually use that to solve poverty. China got hundreds of millions of people out of poverty recently. That's a good accomplishment. We should go back to that way of thinking. The next thing, the last thing, is freedom from fear. Everyone has the right to be free of fear, and that means two things to me. It means stop the permanent war. Get out of these Middle Eastern places, have cooperation with them to build the high-speed trains, the power plants, the things that we need, but let's not have these wars. Freedom from fear also means you should not be fearing, like the police, for example. If we have a brutality that affects black from a police department, you need to address that by looking at things like, for example, why are the local police departments connected to the Pentagon? Why are they getting that kind of an outlook as occupiers instead of local community police forces? We need the police. The police do a heroic job, but we can't tolerate brutality. That's insane. Don't make up some general theory about racism in the world when you need to address a specific problem like this. It's a real problem. But we will, I believe, solve these problems by doing the kind of cooperation around a program of rebuilding a modern economy that is in everybody's interests. And that's between countries and also between us, between the people that are now stuck in this nonsense in the United States, the kind of hatred between the two sides. We don't need that. Let's rebuild the physical economy in the United States.
Yeah.
Anton, we need high-speed trains.
Anton Chaykin is with us. His book is whoweare.com. You can go to whoweareBook.com. So did we do the exact event that triggered the Civil War? We got to do that.
Yeah, I'd say the most important event was the election of Andrew Jackson, and what followed that, his being controlled in an anti-industrial, anti-government direction, where the government of the United States had its hands tied behind its back, and all power went into the hands of Southern slave owners and Wall Street.
Hmm.
If the government can't intervene in with a national bank, with paying for transportation or sponsoring new transportation infrastructure, if you can't have tariffs to manage your trade and protect your manufacturing, if you're not allowed to do that at all, then the government is useless. The government should be involved in the economy to protect and promote the interest of your own country.
Yes.
And Jackson and Van Buren and the people that followed that stopped that and said, get the government out of the way. And he said he's for the people. But who took over in those years under that kind of rhetoric? Wall Street and Southern slave owners. And they ran the country into the ground until the point where the United States was finished as a nation unless we stood up to the slave owners. That didn't even need to happen. If we'd continued what was happening under John Quincy Adams and Monroe and also earlier George Washington, we had a program to develop the whole country.
But it wasn't about slavery itself, sir, was it? It was about the industrialization and what they were doing and where they were buying their equipment and such, correct?
But it is also about slavery.
Oh, it was.
Because it was the slave owners who said, let's not have tariffs. Let's have free trade. Let's let's have globalism. It was the slave owners who said globalism, not American national industrial development. Hmm. You have to, this requires thinking. It requires knowledge. If you simply say, just tell me who's the good guys and the bad guys, how would you ever believe one who just told you, I have a list of good guys and bad guys? You couldn't believe somebody. You have to know something about it yourself. So I've written this book so people will know something themselves about history. They can look up everything from my book. I have footnotes that you can follow. If you get the Kindle edition or go on my website, all the footnotes are on the website. You can click on the footnote and go to the archives where I got what I'm telling you. You can read the letters or the original documents yourself. You can follow my leads. This is done as a teaching device. But I'm telling you a story that you can follow about what happened. You need to know these things yourself. You can't simply hear from somebody, no matter how much you respect them, who's a good guy and who's a bad guy.
We like to know who the good guy is, right, and the bad guy. So, yeah.
You got to know what really happened. Yeah. You have to look into it yourself. I've given you a guide to.
So, do you think, Mr. Shatkin, that we're going down a rabbit hole with putting so much energy or disdain against these globalists that are involved with big pharma, big agribusiness? You know, these injection. I mean, the media, the central bankers.
Yeah,
these people. But these people are pretty spooky because they're doing some pretty spooky things. How do we deal with that?
They are. You need to go back to a sense of what are human beings really. Let's think about that. That's where you start. What is a human being? What is a man? A human being is a little lower than the angels.
Yes, sir.
A human being is made in the image of God, of the Creator. And the Creator has reason and order and beauty in the universe.
Yes,
right? It's a beautiful order in the universe. Now, human beings have the power to discover fundamentally new things that improve life for our fellow human beings, but also give us the power to control nature. And new resources come in, because that's our nature. We will have any resource. So we create new resource. For example, when people first used fire and for warmth or even to power an engine, they were using trees as a fuel. You keep doing that, you're going to destroy your environment. So we found that coal and later petroleum could be used for those purposes. Now we need to go beyond that for a more powerful input, nuclear power. That's a totally new. But coal and uranium were new. They were based on our breakthroughs in knowledge about how nature works. Before that, they were just something black stuff oozing out of the ground or some black rock. Didn't know what they were. So resources are infinite. They depend, our success depends on the human mind, which is superior to other animals. That identity, don't give me a sexual identity or a racial identity. Give me an identity of the human being as superior. And that includes genius. Everybody has a spark of genius and compassion. Compassion is part of your nature as a human being.
Right.
We love our children, we love our grandchildren. We have this spirit that takes great delight in other people's success if we're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
That's what it means to be human. So let's be human. And that way we can just laugh at these globalists while we build up the power of humanity, the power of our country, and a future for our children. You know, when I was growing up, there were machinists, there were railroad engineers, there were a lot of different kinds of workers or people that had their own machine shops or other businesses that were productive. Many of them were very inventive, if not inventors. They were productive industries. A lot of this way of life life has disappeared in the United States. We have people in the so-called service industries making bad food or serving it or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow we have to look forward to recreating this kind of a skilled population. That's our objective. If we can do that and take pride in building up that power in other countries as well as people, will be our friends in joint projects, then we have a future. But we have to rebuild a population that has a way of life that's optimistic and skillful and is competent, like we did on purpose. And my book, the first volume already published, the second will be done soon, shows how we did this in the past. And really, it
and
shows
so you're thinking, I'm kind of hearing you saying, sir, that if we understand really how it was done on a deep level, not just the good guys and bad guys, then we can figure out something that we can do locally in our own city, in our own county, in our own neighborhood, or I don't know, get this thing moving again away from these people that want to have a one world government, globalist, you know, whatever.
It's true for persons and for your personal life, mm-hmm. but it's also true for a new national strategy. You know, the public did not vote for war in Iraq or war
in Syria.
Or this stuff. The public hasn't voted for any of these things.
Yes, sir.
They didn't vote for free trade. They never would. But if we are to go back to self-government and have a government that where a majority of the people support the U.S. federal government, that would be a good situation. And it can only happen if the federal government is acting in a way that a majority would support it, that there is a program for broad prosperity, new prosperity, where, for example, there's a great demand for workers more than can be supplied.
Right now,
where the
today.
Worker who's,
today.
Right? Right now. Yeah, we need, but we don't have that right now in the right way. We just have certain areas where they can't supply the workers. But we, for example, we have a terrible manufacturing system under the globalists. It's called just-in-time.
Yes, sir.
Where you don't have any backup on manufacturing facilities. You don't produce any more. You don't produce even enough of what you need. You depend on almost accident we hope it works out. Well, we saw that. It didn't work out. We the supply chain's breaking down all over the world and in our country. We get so much stuff from China or some other place, and our factories are not supplying us. So we need to replace that idea, which was set up only for speculators in Wall Street. We need to replace that with going back to the idea of redundant. We're producing plenty. We have some reserves. And we're building up a reserve capability to solve problems that are going to come up that we don't even know about. Pandemics and things like that, right? So if we have the idea that we can succeed, you know, Jules Verne wrote a book called From the Earth to the Moon.
Yes.
And in that, it was right after the American Civil War, where they shoot a projectile out of a rocket up to the moon. It's not good technology, but the idea of that was that America showed in our struggle for the Union and in building great industries of America, America showed that Americans could do anything. They could accomplish miracles by setting their mind to it, by doing work, by making inventions. America invented electricity for the public. America invented so many different things, right? And held to get these things. But Americans could do anything. Let's get back to that point of view. And it, not just for some stupid cell phone or some animated thing, right? Something more serious, more important, where people's real needs are helped. You know, you're talking about natural foods. Supposing you had high-speed trains, really modern high-speed trains, and in cities and inner cities. I'm talking about a 400-mile-an-hour, 500, 600-mile-an-hour
Yes, sir.
Maglev, whatever it is, in tubes, however you do it. You could have fresh food delivered simply, cheaply, really, because you can mass produce trains like that, right, in factories. If we had cheap electricity supplied by nuclear power and later by fusion power, you're bringing down the cost tremendously so that you could do what's needed. You could build new cities. Imagine you could walk to work. It's close by. Or you could take a fast, cheap transport, even free transport. Like we made roads free. You can charge for other things. But if we could have, we don't need to have our cities choked with cars. Don't outlaw cars. A car is your personal freedom. But use it for your personal use. Why should you be forced to drive a car to get to work? Make any sense, right? It's not modern. Car was invented around 1900. Come on. Let's have, look what China, Japan, other countries are doing with high-speed train. We're way behind. Why shouldn't we have everything in the forefront of science? We definitely and desperately need the space program. We need to explore the universe. And when we did that under the Kennedy space program, which was supposed to go on to Mars with nuclear rockets, that was a part of the program. But when we did that, we had private inventions and initiatives that brought us tremendous wealth. It didn't cost us anything. It resulted, that kind of investment brought us huge advances in our economy. We're still getting them.
Mr. Shatkin, with all you know about central banking and money and the history, and you know deep in there, going back to the revolution, in your opinion, what is the optimal way to do this, to have the Treasury create their own money when they go short dollars, which they do all the time, and have that be the form of inflation? How would you do it if you were king?
I don't want to be king.
Well, I know.
That's good. If I ran the world, that's great. Okay, so there is a bill in Congress now to set up a national infrastructure bank. And that would issue new bonds. And it would not involve national borrowing. It's a very good way to do it. But all of the investment is in new infrastructure. People should look that up.
So people would loan this bank money, and then you would build roads or whatever you would do.
You could deposit. You could make deposits, but it's not. It's primarily a matter of issuing credit from this bank to projects which are federal projects, state projects, local projects, and some private projects, to build up things that are desperately needed.
Yes, sir.
To repair and build new infrastructure. The important thing to understand is that you can't simply spend money. You can't simply have money, this kind of money or that kind of. When you make an investment, when you use large parts of the available funds, whether it's credit or cash, when you make an investment, it should be for things that will result in more production, more progress of industry, more increase of skills.
Hoover Dam.
Kind of thing.
Hoover Dam. Tennessee Valley.
That's right. That's right.
The TVA.
New factories that are based on modern technology, that are non-polluting because they're using electric and high-temperature processes. They're modern processes. And if you invest in that way so that your credit is used to build up more profitable, real profit.
Yes.
I'm not talking about taking money out of people, but profit, produce more than you consume. New production and new skills. That means that you're setting up revenue generation for the future, new profits and new revenue. And that means that you have more than the amount that you put into it. You're not causing inflation.
Yes, sir.
The present kind of money printing in recent years, ever since George Bush and Barack Obama, they had this so-called answer to the and it was to print money, but not even use that money to make productive investments, but simply to bail out bankers and to prop up the stock market. You're not accomplishing anything except inflation and chaos in your economy.
That's what's going on today. That's what's going on today.
It is. It's still going on. We never improved what to the 2007 and 8 breakdown.
Yeah.
We went back to more crime of speculation by the big banks and the offshore bank. The whole offshore system is a continuation into our era of the original imperial crime system, which was the East India Company, and a whole network of speculation connected to that, where they would go into India, say, not to develop India, but to steal what they had and make slaves out of people. They went into China with opium from India and made dope slaves out of the Chinese to steal what China had. That's not a good system. That's the current globalist system.
Iraq,
it's not based on...
Iraq, Syria, yeah. Syria,
okay,
Libya.
Iraq, yeah. But think this. What would be the right kind of investment to make in foreign countries? It would be joint projects that they and we are working on together to build up the power of production. When Kennedy was president, we had a friend who was the president of Ghana, Kwame Nkrumah, leader of the Black Nationalists in Africa, the first foreign head of state to visit Kennedy in the White House. And they worked together on developing a great dam on the Volta River that built up a huge reservoir to provide hydroelectric power to industrialize West Africa, to give the Africans more rising in terms of their skills and their powers. We don't believe in that today. Our children are being taught that, oh, you don't want to have a big lake and a reservoir there and a dam. You're going to interfere with rhinoceroses drinking. Who cares about the children not having electricity or hospitals? Let them die. Do poor people's lives matter, to coin a phrase? What do black lives matter in Africa? Yes, they do. How about having modern times? How about having power over nature so that those people can live? There's 500 million people in Africa without electricity.
Wow.
There's 100 million children who are virtually starving. Are you going to tell me that I prefer windmills? Well, will windmills give you enough electricity to have the industries they need and the hospitals and everything else built, to have the steel mills they need, to have the irrigation, massive irrigation they need, the canals and everything else to bring fresh water where they need it? They don't have enough water in many places, but there's lots of water in other places. Are you going to solve the problem with your preference for a windmill? I'm sorry, your preference or your opinion about this doesn't match the needs of human beings, which call for massive energy throughput. They need modern power. And so to understand this, we can't think like peasants here. Americans are not peasants. Farmers were scientific thinkers. So yes, the globalists are a big problem. They shouldn't run the world. But how are we going to run the world as citizens? We have to know something. We can't just be moping around saying, oh, the globalists are all powerful. They're
yes,
all
sir.
From outer space.
They roll us
from the heavens. They're not gods. They may think they're gods, but they're not capable of running the world effectively. They can only make things worse. They were the ones that built up our successful industries. They took them over at certain points, but they never were the ones to invent and develop these industries. That's a fact.
Yes, sir. Anton Shatkin is with us. Wow, fun stuff. WhoWeAreBooks.com. WhoWeAreBooks.com. I really think it's interesting talking to you because you keep going to the positive. You keep going to, if we know who we are, the title of your book, then we could figure out that we've done this before. And we can,
right?
I mean, this is really where you're. That's great. It's very unusual. Very unusual. And good for you. Stay right there. I did do a little break here, sir, and then we're gonna continue. Here's some great technology. Talk about technology. Check this one out. This conversation goes back 7 years with Dr. Patrick Flanagan. Listen.
And then I discovered that Hunza water also contained negative ionized hydrogen, which is a source of biological electrons. When we're young, we have enzymes in our body called dehydrogenase, and the purpose of dehydrogenase is to lift off hydrogen ions from foods we eat, and their purpose is to create NADH, which is a chemical that acts as a shuttle in the mitochondria for producing all the energy in our body, adenosine triphosphate. And when people take this, it causes DNA repair. It heals the body from all kinds of oxygen-free radicals. It also helps the body recover from damage from radiation.
Well, we certainly want some of this stuff, right? Check out our AquaCure machine. AquaCure machine on OneRadioNetwork.com. Lifetime warranty. And along with a lifetime warranty, a 1-year, no questions asked, money-back guarantee. If you don't like your results, breathe the gas, bubble the water, listen to what Dr. Flanagan has to say about this and others. The AquaCure machine on OneRadioNetwork.com. Use promo code OneRadio, 10% discount. It is a fascinating technology, one of the best ones that we've come across. You can imagine, I've been doing these talk shows for, 40 years or so. All of the different gadgets and potions and creams and herbs that I have been introduced to. People send me stuff. And this is the most fascinating technology that I've come across. It's hydrogen. Our body is the number one element in our body is hydrogen. It's the number one element in the universe. Stars eat hydrogen for breakfast. Mr. Shatkin is talking about new technology. This is very cool. There's a lifetime warranty on this puppy. Lifetime warranty and a 1-year, no questions asked, money back guarantee for this baby. So it's the real deal. I think you'll like it. Use promo code ONERADIO on OneRadioNetwork.com. We've known Brandon Amelani, who runs Shen Blossom, for just a very long time. He's a good man, and we came acquainted with Brandon when he was with Daniel Vitalis about 12 years ago. He's a Qigong fellow, Chinese medicine fellow. He's a good, it's the real deal. Various exquisite products. Everything is in Myron glass. He has all kinds of different medicinal mushrooms. He has 50-year-old ginseng. He has a protein powder called Total Nutrition Protein. First ingredient is bamboo, if you can believe it. Pinion nut, nettles, beet tops, chlorella, spirulina, a little bit of rice there towards the end of the ingredient label, but this is very nice, digestible. I've been doing it every day with the colostrum in my smoothie. My body's loving this product. It's called Total Nutrition Protein. It's on Shen Blossom, OneRadioNetwork.com. Look at all the products. And read the ingredients. Once you start reading the ingredients, man, you'll be buying all kinds of stuff. So just don't buy too much. Just, get what you need because, got to save your money. You never know what's going to happen here.
We are listener-supported. One Radio Network.
Well, Mr. Shapkin, it is whoweareBook.com. You have to go? You have to do another interview?
I have to go. Get off, yeah.
Well, so, what's your takeaway here? I guess what we ended with just a moment ago is really a good takeaway. The purpose of your book, right, and why you're writing this, much more than just giving people the correct history, but helping them to understand who we are.
That's right, and I think I'd like people to take this book and use it to ask some questions. you know, why did we change our national philosophy from industrial and scientific progress after the death of Kennedy? Why did we change to this system? Who decided these things?
Exactly.
Trump could have asked those questions. He could have, you know. So let's ask these questions and do it in a spirit of optimism that we did miracles as a people. Civilization has accomplished things to raise people out of terrible poverty and backwardness. Mm-hmm. We could do this again. Let's look back at what we've done, but I would say take this book and take some of the ideas in here and ask questions in places where they may not be being. Do this in schools, in high schools, in colleges, at workplaces, of course, on your internet, in other places. But I have to go. People can get in touch with me and ask whatever you like.
They can.
At the website.
At whowearebook.com, Andrew Shayton. Thanks a lot, sir. I appreciate you staying so long. We kept you over your stay. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Good work. Okay. Yeah, good stuff.
Right.
Andrew Shayton. Yeah, man, I'm getting that book. I am. I don't read a lot of books from guests. I mean, you can imagine I wouldn't get any writing done on my screenplay. I would just be, but this sounds fascinating. This sounds like a good one to get in. Could take a while. It's a big volume, and this is just volume one of volume two. So whowearebook.com. Okay, we're going to take a little break here, and then about half an hour, we're going to talk about organic food with a fellow who knows a whole lot about organic food, where it comes from, how we're doing, the labeling and everything else. So that'll be cool. Tomorrow, all about cannabis. Tomorrow, also William Wong tomorrow. Penny Kelly is going to be here on Wednesday. And I think we're going to have somebody else too. So we're going to have a lot of things to do this week. We appreciate your ongoing support. Thank you for coming, visiting with us. We're on every morning. We have something up 10 o'clock. Usually we have a live program at 10. Sometimes we have a recorded show on Thursday. I take Thursdays off. So thanks for your support. People from time to time shoot us 10 or 20 bucks a month. You can sign up and do that if you'd like. That helps and helps take a little, you know. It all just kind of flows in, and we're very honored and blessed to be able to make a living talking about things that are fun, and hopefully you get some information here that in a way that you don't get anywhere else. And so pass on these links to everyone that you care about, and that helps us to spread the word. We have all of our, not all of them, but a lot of our videos on our website now. Check on the videos in the top. All of our archives and audio, also more videos, even on BitChute. You can just do Patrick Timpone BitChute if you'd like to watch the videos, and they're fun to pass along to people. So we'll see you in about half an hour talking about organic food on One Radio Network. Thank you. Thanks to Anton Shaitkin. Good stuff. May the blessings be.
We talk about your health, wealth, and well-being on OneRadioNetwork.com.